for now, we're going to be going live on the ground to PEI. Peter, are you there?
Yes. Hi there. How are you, Darren?
Not too bad. A little bit disorganized this morning, and unfortunately, as you may be able to tell, but we're going to pull through it. So if you want to just go ahead and introduce yourself again and just give us a little bit of a background about what's actually going on with the Trans-Canada Highway.
Sure. Well, I'm standing at the side of the Trans-Canada Highway in the middle, central PEI, and the government has proposed and pushed through a realignment of a six-kilometer section here, which is going through the middle of some old-growth Acadian forest, which is an increasingly rare entity in this part of the world. And there are many, many other issues related to this financial craziness surrounding the cost of the highway and a lack of public consultation. But, I mean, from a green perspective, certainly an ecological perspective, the loss of the old-growth forest is our biggest concern.
And so what the... on the website that you have there, there's a few things that are outlined having to do with the flawed process. And do you want to just explain what you mean by that? About was there? I mean, you have the environmental concern because you don't obviously want this forest to be cut down,
yep.
The old growth forest. But what? Talk a little bit about the you're saying how the islanders were not involved in the process. What was the sort of democracy issue here?
Yeah, sure. Well, right from the very beginning, and this has been going on almost exactly a year now, Darren. The government came to the people with several proposals of how to spend money that we don't have, by the way, because we're so crippled by debt at the moment, like every other jurisdiction in Canada. But they came to us with several proposals for realigning the Trans-Canada Highway in such a way that they could gain some access to federal funds through the Atlantic Gateway Fund. If they were to do that, the feds would kick in with 50% of the money up to a certain amount, and we could have our roads improved for a fraction of the cost that it would otherwise be. So several proposals came through, none of which were attractive to the people at PEI, and they spoke out very loudly and clearly and said, no, we don't want any of these proposals. So the government went away and came back literally about a week later with what has been called Plan B, which was never one of the original proposals, which was before the public, and they presented it as a done deal. In fact, the Minister of Transportation stood up at the one public meeting that we did have after Plan B was proposed and said, this is a done deal. And now that's, you can hardly refer to that as a consultative process. There was no consultation whatsoever.
And so, as listeners, I'm sure noticed at the beginning, I was sort of fumbled with my notes there again. I just want to properly introduce you again. That's Peter Bevan Baker, and you're also a member of the Green Party in PEI. Is this a Green Party issue, or are you just out there as a citizen? What's the sort of political aspect to this having to do with your political affiliations?
Well, I mean, it's both. I'm the incoming leader of the Green Party of Prince Edward Island, and I can't hide that. And I have run 9 times. The Green Party over the last 20 years as a candidate. So I'm well known here. Prince Edward Island is small and it's difficult to be anonymous here the best of times. But when you do stuff like that, people know who I am and what my affiliations are. But the group which sprung up when Plan B became a big issue here is very much a community group of concerned citizens. It was not a partisan group at all. We have people here from the NDP, there are Greens, there are a Conservative Party here, the opposition in the legislature have come out and opposed this as well. So no, this is very much a citizens group from the community which has sprung up. By the way, all this traffic noise in the background, we're standing at the side of the highway here with our signs, and we've had tremendous public support.
And one of the other things I wanted to ask you about was it's on the outline as far as what the issues with the Plan B was the something called the pretense of safety. And what you outline there is that transport officials admitted they used outside data on the Plan B site to, quote, yep. unquote, improve the collision numbers. Now, I'm naturally someone who's very, very skeptical by nature. And for me, unless I see sort of an incentive to do that, I'm sort of confused as to why transportation officials would do that. So what would be their reason for wanting to improve these numbers? And I guess by connection, why would someone want to do this project if it wasn't the best option? Do you know what I'm getting at? What do you see their motivations are as trying to push ahead this project with potentially misleading information?
Okay. I know exactly what you're getting at, Darren. And first of all, the government is trying to justify the unjustifiable. This project is irrational any way you look at it, whether that's financially, ecologically, in every way, the building of this highway makes no sense at all. So the only way that they could try and justify the unjustifiable was to cook some statistics and try and persuade the public that this particular stretch of highway was uniquely dangerous or particularly dangerous, much more dangerous than the rest of the Trans-Canada here on the island. And they have not changed their tune. There was an hour-long radio call-in show this morning with the Minister of Transportation, who was pathetic, who kept coming back to the fact that this is a safety issue when it's been proven that the statistics they used were fudged. And much more so than that, even if there was a safety issue on this part of the highway, there are many, many other more efficient, more effective, cheaper ways of dealing with safety issues on our roads than building faster, straighter highways through old-growth forests. We should be spending... safety is not about road engineering. It's about driver behavior and public education. And if a fraction of the amount of money that they're going to waste on this highway that nobody on PEI wants and we don't need and can't afford, if a fraction of that money had been spent on public education and initiatives such as doing up your seatbelts, better enforcement of speed controls, and impaired driving, which is a huge problem here on PEI. We have the highest rate of impaired driving in the country. Then we could
I was actually going to say, why don't they just stick a bunch of road bumps around the corners? But I guess if impaired driving is your biggest problem, that's not a good option.
No. So, yeah, you're right.
I don't drive, so I have no context for what that would do.
Yeah. So there's, you know, there's nothing sensible about this project. And the government has really struggled to try and justify it to the public, an increasingly skeptical and angry public, I might say. You know, we're known, PEI is the gentle island, but I'll tell you, the people of PEI have been riled up about this in a way that I have never, ever seen before.
So that gets me, I think, to the thing that I want to sort of like really crystallize and make really clear for myself. And so you've outlined how you said justify the unjustifiable. And so I'm still sort of looking for motivation on their behalf to do this. Like, what do you think the benefit for them is? Why would this project be pushed ahead if it's such a bad idea?
Well, there's one word, Darren, and it's patronage. This province is a small province, and that's a beautiful thing on many levels. There's an intimacy here, and a connection that we have with our elected officials, which is really quite charming. But there's also a dark side to that. And there is a small group of very powerful, very rich individuals here connected at all levels of society who pull some strings which they should not be able to pull. And I think it's quite clear that this project is being pushed forward because there are friends of the government who are going to benefit hugely from this. There is a company here, Island Coastal, who are doing the major work here with very clear ties to the Liberal government. And there's no doubt in my mind that what is driving this is nothing more than patronage.
Mm, so another way that I've heard on political shows that described is something along like crony capitalism might be another way to describe
yep.
that.
Yep, yeah, that's a perfect phrase.
Okay. Yeah, no, I just, you know what I mean? Like, we just, you know, I hear all the time, and I've read some of the articles that was put out. I've read your website. I've also read a couple of the articles that were in the major newspapers about this issue as well. And yep. It's another one of those issues and areas where, you know, it's kind of like reading two things night and day. When I read the mainstream media reports on this, they made, you know, for lack of a better term, they kind of made you sound like a bunch of lone nuts. And then you read your website, and it seems like in an open and shut case that they're, you know, this is an insane project, and who could possibly support it? I think this is a good case to bring up sort of how difficult it can be for the public in general, you know, outside, removed from a local issue like this, to really make hide nor hair of it, right? Like, it can be that you're hearing two completely disparate stories, and people don't really know sort of who to trust, and I think this can be very confusing. And I think maybe this is why there's such a problem getting Canada at large to support kind of local issues, you know, why you don't have tons and tons of people in Vancouver writing letters or, you know, emails or getting excited about this issue. It's not because I don't think that they don't care. I think it's that, you know, for the average person, it's very difficult to sort of sort this all out, and that therefore, okay, well, I'm going to leave this one alone because I don't really know anything about it.
Yeah.
Do you understand? I mean, so how do we get through that then? I mean, this is one example, but let's blow it up into a bigger issue for our last question now. Let's kind of macro size this a little bit.
Yep.
How do we deal with this problem? How do you get support for people outside of PEI for an issue like this when it's very difficult for even, you know, the uninformed in PEI to get a handle on what's actually going on?
Yeah, I mean, of course, that's a very important question here, because there's only so much pressure that we as Islanders can put on our government, particularly if they've been completely intransigent and blind to all of our concerns. We've tried every avenue possible to get them to listen to this, from petitions to a public plebiscite, a citizen initiated plebiscite, where over 90% of the respondents responded against Plan B. So we have tried everything we possibly can, and now we're left with the option of civil disobedience, which is what we're doing. And I myself received a trespassing summons just 2 days ago for entering the work site, which, by the way, is on public land. I argued the case that it's my constitutional privilege, right, to be on public land. This is the people's land. How can I trespass on my own land? And I was met with some strangely unsympathetic RCMP officers. And Elizabeth May, you may have seen this, issued a press release just yesterday, I think it was, maybe the day before, demanding that the RCMP drop these charges immediately and that they're completely bogus. But it's publicity like that which is going to take this from a local issue to a national issue, because this is just representative of so many crazy things that government does, you know, without any heed to the will of the people, and without any long-term respect for the environment and our democratic institutions. And yes, it would be lovely if this became a national story, and our job would be made much easier, for sure. And I don't know how far this broadcast goes, Darren, but I would certainly call on anybody to try and find out about this as much as you can. And because I mentioned earlier, the size of PEI is very small, and we can influence government here if they are pushed far enough. And I think we're right at the edge, Darren. The government is flailing here. This is a rogue government which has failed to listen, stopped listening to the people. And I think they could be easily scared into canceling this. Not too late to cancel this project. And if there was national pressure from coast to coast, that would go a long way to doing that.
Absolutely. Well, you'll be thrilled to know that we actually have national coverage. There's people listening to us from coast to coast right now, Vancouver to St. John's. So we're
wonderful.
All over the people all over the country are hearing your message. I'm gonna let you go on that note.